This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
This is Case Study, A Window into the Future, the world's first school to go fully e-only. We are joined by three panelists today. The first is Phil Darren, the Dean of Academic Affairs at South Kent School, which you'll be hearing more about today. Gonzo Garcia, who is the CIO and a graduate of the school. And the most recent graduate of South Kent, Delano Williams, we're delighted to have today, who can speak specifically about his experiences in this digital-only environment. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to our presentation. Delano just graduated yesterday, 11 a.m.
24 hours ago.
I'm Phil Darren, in case you missed that part, the Dean of Academic Affairs at South Kent. Before we get started, we do this often in our classes. I don't know if you've heard of today's meet before, but if you have questions as you go, you may want to follow along. You can enter them in there. We'll either answer them now or I can log on later. It's probably active for a few days, so I can actually answer your questions for a couple of days. And that's what it'll look like as you sort of follow along as a blog. Teachers use this in class. If you're giving a presentation, 15, 20-minute speech in class, you can follow along. I'm sorry for the mic. I don't think I need it, but I think we're recording it as well. So I apologize for the celebrity status here. So why it started, I took over at South Kent 2008-2009 as the academic dean. The person I replaced was a gentleman named Paul Abbott. He refers to himself as the resident fossil on our campus. He had been the academic dean for over 40 years. One of the first things I found when I was clearing out his desk was a schedule from 1974-1975. I kid you not, exact same friggin' schedule we were using 2008-2009. That just frightened me. And so I began to think in my mind, what else is stale? What else are we doing that we've just been doing? What has been handed down year to year because we're either too lazy or not courageous enough to kind of to push it? And so it started for me with the schedule. And as you can see, the young boy on falling asleep in the books here, it's now expanded, obviously, into iPad adoption at our school or tablet adoption at our school.
For years and years and years, if you look at how schools started in this country, they started by trying to teach content, because the idea was you teach students all of this information that they might need someday. The iPad and digital learning platforms have flipped that whole thing now. Now what happens is students don't really need to worry about a lot of the content because they can find it. So they can find it pretty quickly. So what we've been able to do now is shift our classroom and our teaching in our philosophy of education a little bit, in that now we don't have to worry so much about content, but it's what are you going to do with that content? How do you apply it? Can you think critically? Can you sort out all these different arguments and penetrate to the best one? And then what are you going to do with it?
It's not necessarily just the teacher standing in front of the classroom and the students listening. I think it's allowed us to be more interactive. For example, right now I'm sitting here doing the interview, and my students are in the background using their iPads and a couple of other devices to record some data. So I think it allows for a bit more independence from the students.
Before, you would have the, oh, I forgot my paper, or I forgot my book, or I forgot my pen, or I forgot my pencil, and now everything is there. The books are on the iPad, the internet is on the iPad. You don't have to worry if a kid has a computer or doesn't have a computer. Everything is right there.
I think it opens up their mind and it makes them want to learn. It makes them more willing to read and more willing to be engaged. I was worried at first that the kids would use it as a gaming tool, as a way for it to screw around, surf the internet and wander off and that. But honestly, it's been just the opposite. The students seem more engaged.
As far as the things that you can do on an iPad, create a graphic novel, create a movie, edit a movie, all of those things really come in handy and make learning more than just pen and paper and book.
When I was in school, you walk into a library and there was all of this information, but I had no idea really how to get it, and it would take so long to try to find all that information, and so you'd spend all day trying to find one or two little kernels of things that you needed. Now, it's at your fingertips. You can go just about anywhere you want. You can find all of this information, and not only just the information, but you can find video clips about people that you're interested in, and you can see cool things that are going on. You can investigate what's going on with quantum entanglement if you're interested interested in that. It's all right here, and it is so quick and so easy. It's made learning really explosive.
Five years, 500,000 students in one county. Right, that is, and the quote here is William Habermel. I don't know the man personally, but I know he's in charge of Orange County schools, 500,000 students, and they're considering going to tablets, right? And that's one county in one state. How many? You know, if we look at the adoption of digital textbooks, really, it's, and you'll see it at the end, it's not going to be if, but when. And for us, we chose, you know, to be on the bleeding edge of this, to jump in as a school. A little bit about South Kent: we're a boarding school in Northwest Connecticut, all boys, 180 all boys. You know, obviously very small, tight-knit family-style community. Just to give you a little background, and you can, you know, if you have questions about that later, you can certainly ask. Making the switch or the catalyst for the change. As part of my duties as academic dean, to try to get out there and expand what South Kent was offering, I, you know, began to go and to travel to conferences to get a sense of what really was out there in 21st century curriculum. You know, reading Heidi Hayes Jacobs, Teach Like a Champion, and trying to get my faculty members to do the same. But I'm sitting on a plane and next to a 7-year-old kid in the middle of the flight, he pulls his laptop out and Skypes his grandmother. 7-year-old kid, 32,000 feet, Skyping his grandmother. What's he going to do when he comes to my school? Right? Well, I mean, what's his baseline? My daughter, I have a 3-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 1-year-old. Yeah. I told my wife, number 4 equals Marine Corps. I'm going. So we're done. But my kids, like if I give them, they play with the iPad all day long. I'm sure if you have children, you know the same way. Like if we were in here, they'd be over touching the screen. Why doesn't it move, right? I mean, I bought this beautiful television, you know, $2,000 television. They hate it because they can't interact with it. They're going to expect this. And if you think you're going to teach a kid that is, you know, now 7 or 8 years old right now, that's in this world of tablet computers, with interaction and screens, if you think you're going to give them a textbook and they're going to want to read from it, they're going to, this doesn't even tell me what that word means. They're going to just laugh at your face. So for us, that was the catalyst. We've got to do this. We want to be the leaders in this. Let's jump right in.
It was interesting as at the same time that Phil was taking over in the academic realm, I was asked to jump into the technology. And one of the things I noticed right away is everybody was tossing out terms like one-to-one. And we were being realistic. We're looking at these guys like Delano back then. These guys are carrying 3 devices at least, 3-to-1, and they're constantly connected. And you know, they'd always complain about bandwidth and things like that. So one of the first step we did was obviously tackle our network. You have to have the bandwidth. Obviously, we're sitting in here today all trying to connect to the Wi-Fi in the Javits Center. We're just like, are you kidding me? So we don't want the kids to have that same experience at our school. It's got to be seamless for them. But for deciding on the device, it was really interesting. We had a great relationship with the Apple Store, our local Apple Store. To us, it's 45 minutes away, and it's a great excuse to get off campus in the middle
it's
of nowhere.
For us,
yeah, to us, that's local. But they called us back in 2010 at the launch of the initial iPad. I am a huge Mac fan, so I was like, oh, sweet. I get to go and grab one right away. So I grabbed my head of school, and I said, you got to come take a look at this thing. We're being invited. They call all. If you don't know Northern New England, there's prep schools like everywhere. Honestly, we're South Kent. You're Kent, Salisbury. I mean, we're all in the same room. We're just a stone throw away from each other. So they called us all out. We headed over there. This was the cool part for my head of school. We bypassed the line, walked right in the Apple Store, and he just grabbed it. And I just remember that feeling, you know, just watching him. He's like, kidding me? He's just looking at it and goes, we need to make this happen. He got it right away. And what happened was then we had an alum who's totally on board. He's like, it's about time you guys did something that's relevant. So he decided to buy me just about every tablet on the market. So I thought it was like Christmas for me. I was like, this is so cool. I got all these different devices. Because he wanted us to make the right choice. And yeah, there were a bunch of different tablets. We use Google Apps. So we were like, hey, shouldn't that work great on Android? Not so much. But not a knock on them. It's just interesting. This is all just cutting edge, like Phil was saying, bleeding edge. But when we looked at the iPad, what really drew us to it was not just the simplicity of the device, but I had someone physically I can talk to. Try calling Amazon Education. You're still waiting on the phone. There's not even a phone number. I get somebody online. I know Apple obviously tacked in. I'm not trying to plug just them, but that's been the key thing. So if you're out there and you're Amazon, Google, all these guys, we'd be more than happy to start the Amazon Education Department. So give us a call. But you know, having that physical presence, allowing our students and our faculty to go to the store and get training free, learning how to use the device, that was a huge piece that influenced us on why we chose the iPad. Next piece is how we made it happen. Again, I mentioned the network. There's three main pieces to this. First one being network. We needed the bandwidth because if not, you know, you implement technology in your classrooms and there's no Wi-Fi connection, you start getting just that circle and it's not working. It's just a paperweight. You've got to have the bandwidth. You have to have a seamless kind of flow. Second part is the faculty. You know, for a bunch of, you know, what traditionally educators are known for being pretty liberal, they're not big on change. I've been doing the same thing for 15, 20. I've been doing this for 20 years. Some of my teachers are still at the school. But and they've been teaching the same thing. So our head of school just looked in and said, I'm just asking you to look out the window. Take a look what's out there. So what we did with our faculty is we had them in a room. We had a bunch of iPads. This was like our Steve Jobs moment for my head of school. He's just like, here you go. Here's an iPad. Take it home for Christmas. It's a $25 gift card to iTunes. Incorporate it into your life. That's it. That's what he wanted to start at. So we gave him a 9-month head start. So it's like a Cessna airplane. We let them take off. Why? Because Delano over here, the Jupiter rocket, will catch up instantly. I mean, if you give a tablet to a faculty member and a student at the same time, yeah, the poor faculty guy is a little lost for a while. So that was kind of our implementation process on that. So working with the faculty on that and getting them, again, accustomed to using it. They came back from that Christmas break reading books, checking email. I mean, they all love the device, and they started understanding that. And then Phil shows up at the next faculty meeting and says, good, because in September, everyone is getting one, and we need you guys to adopt digital books.
No, really.
And it wasn't until about this time last year when they really? Yeah. And then the third part is obviously student training and working with them, which was not as difficult as people would think. Again, to them, this is just native. This is where they live. So they were excited. We gave them free iPads. So year one, and this was the interesting part. Before we went to digital books, that being one of our goals, we worked with a company called classbook.com, and my CFO brought me in. He's like, it took me forever to develop this relationship. They provide all the books for you guys, you know, go online, the students purchase it. And I'm like, we can fire these guys. How easy is it to get digital books, right? You just go to Amazon or figure it out. Exactly. I didn't know that at the time. But dealing with publishers, and no disrespect, wow, it was kind of tough at first. And luckily what happened was I said we're going to fire these guys, and the CEO ends up giving me a call. I didn't know he was the CEO. And he's like, if you're going to fire me, just give me an opportunity to see how we can kind of work through this process and do something about it. And I got to give him credit. It was phenomenal. We were able to pull off, again, 92. We looked at our closest competitor. It's about 41% digital. And why is it so difficult? You know, if you choose one reader, we wanted multiple readers. We wanted the process or the feeling for the faculty members to be, you know, seamless. They want them to choose the platform. We had Mr. Darren Phil right here. He decided to change the book because he saw an Inkling title. He's like, yes. I don't want a PDF version of my book. I want interactive. I want the kids to be, you know, engaged. So I'll leave some of that out. But jump in for the 92.
So 92%. We looked at that. I mean, it's like an A-, right? If you're a teacher, pretty good. Not, you know, not perfect, but pretty good. And we wouldn't have gotten there if we had tried to, I think, limit them to one reader. And I would have probably been lynched, to be honest, as the academic dean. If I said, hey, I'm giving you this nice new iPad, learn it and integrate it into your classroom, and then B, guess what? You've also got to change your textbook and all of your curriculum. They would have killed me. So the flexibility that we had allowed me, really probably saved my bacon with my faculty members. They were okay, at least comforted knowing that their textbook that they'd used the year before was in most cases available for use on the iPad. And I'll tell you, just as the end, 90% next year, if we're here, if we're invited back, that's going to be 100. And it's not 100 because I'm beating somebody with a stick. It's 100 because the 8% that's left out feel like they let us down, right? Talk about onboarding, right? They've seen what the boys, how they love, for instance, like I said, Inkling. I don't work for Inkling. Don't get any money for Inkling. I teach from an Inkling book.
We'll take money, though.
I also teach from a course. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's fine. I teach from a Core Smart book. I'll just tell you that the interactive features that our boys see in the Inkling books, they love. So if you're looking at, you know, maybe making digital text, please, like, look at that model. The interaction is huge. And our teachers see this. The teachers that couldn't get their books digitally, and it really was ESL was pretty much the ones that we couldn't find. They've pledged next year, even if they have to write their own, they're gonna do 100%. So,
our favorite slide.
Yeah. From logistical nightmare to logistical dream. This actually could be our cafeteria. So we're a small boarding school. We don't have a ton of facilities or, you know, big buildings. So our buildings are often used for different things. Our cafeteria is also where we do registration day. And you'd come in on registration as a freshman student. When Delano was a freshman, he came in, and there are just stacks of books from classbook.com in the back, right? Just loaded up. And all of our faculty, all of our business office there, looking for the names. Here's your, you know, four boxes of books that you've ordered. That's gone. We don't have it.
We didn't have that this year, and it was fantastic.
Gone.
No word. Back order didn't exist. And that was one of our favorites. And
if you wanted it, you got it right then on your. The kids came with it on their iPads, or we had an orientation session and helped them get them onto their iPads. It was just a huge switch for us. And we'll talk a little bit later about the impact on the faculty not having to put book orders in early and all that. So for us, it went from a logistical nightmare, really, honestly, to logistical dream, to really freeing up our faculty to do what they need to do, which is teach our kids.
Get out there.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for having me today. And second, I want to thank these guys for giving me an extra homework assignment after graduation. Thank you. But I've been at SelfCamp for 4 years now, and I can tell you I've seen the difference between a traditional classroom and a digital classroom. Traditional classroom is mainly where you have one teacher relaying information to you one way. Well, now, this is what we have. The classroom comes alive. With the iPad, you have multiple people in the room, you have a teacher, of course, but you have multiple people in a room, and you each have an iPad, and you each have information coming to you directly from wherever. Information doesn't just go one way, it goes multiple ways, and the information in the classroom becomes collaborative. And rather than one person relaying information to you, the information that the teacher gives to you, sure, you can have it, but then you can also go out in the class and get your own information. Another thing is digital literacy. Literacy for my dad is right here, actually. Digital literacy for my dad is not the same as it is for me now. Literacy for him is just reading and writing in a book. Digital literacy for me now is Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and then, of course, Google Docs, and then using the iPad in class every day. But not only does South Kent teach you digital literacy, it also teaches you citizenship. We all have to be respectful of one another and in a public setting, so why not the same online? Knowing when to do it, how to do it, and how to be respectful of your peers online. And trash the backpack. I have a story for you guys about this one. My sophomore year, there's this senior. His name was Brandon Oglesby. He had the biggest backpack on campus. It had at least 8 books in it. You would ask him, Brandon, why do you have all those books in your bag? He said, well, I don't want to go back and forth to class every single day because we live on a campus. It's not the same as going to your locker. So when we got the iPad, it completely changed that because I walked to class now with just one device. I walked to class with an iPad. And the difference between walking with an iPad and walking with a backpack full of books is the information. The information in a backpack with just textbooks is all dead. It's all dead once it's published. That's all the information you can get once it's been published. Walking with an iPad in your backpack, the information is constantly updating, and you can always go and search for more information rather than having the information in your backpack. Another thing about the information in the backpack, it's not as secure as with an iPad. All right, I have another story. My friend Nino, he used to leave South Kent every Sunday and come back every Monday. So we had a history exam. He left his history book on the train. He lost all his notes. Nothing you can do about that because everything is written down for you. With an iPad, you can leave your iPad on the train. You're out $500, but you can always go back later and just download it from the cloud. This has happened a few times where kids have broken their iPads, come to student affairs. These guys just said, "Hey, you got your iCloud account?" load them up, and they were just good to go, right back to where they started from. And content portability. I can tell you there's been numerous times where I've had a sporting event and I missed class. My dad wasn't very happy about that. But the one specific thing about the iPad was I can always just continue my lesson on the go. My teachers, they use iTunes U. I'm sure you guys know what that is. And then there's also Google Docs. So the information that I would normally miss, I could just load up on my iPad and be good to go. Information is always with me, and I never missed anything on that Monday morning. Thank you.
Couple notes too. I mean, you talk about digital citizenship. I mean, if we've been really obviously paying attention to this as a school, that's we pride ourselves on family and pride ourselves on the personal touch. And if you bring an iPad in the room, and you know, what's that going to mean? What's the impact going to be on a community? Right, to have all these devices. You have the conversation. You ever have a conversation with a teenager now? Yeah. What's up? How you doing? You know, it's totally different. And what's the impact going to be like on our community? They spend 25% of their awake life online. Say it again, 25% of their awake life online. If you don't teach digital citizenship as part of your curriculum as a school, you're not teaching the whole body. You're missing 25%, a quarter of their life. You're not even addressing. So for us, that's a huge actual part of our community, teaching them how to be a part of our community with this in their lives. Good luck. It's not going away. The flexibility of the iPad really comes down to, for us, you know, just when I took over, when we had traditional textbooks, around this time of year, we've just finished graduation. You know, we have like a day or two off, and then it's like, oh my God, I got to get my book or into a class book, or I got to get my, you know, I got to get my syllabus into to me. If you're a teacher, you got to send your syllabus to me right now, 3 months before school starts, so I can publish my book list. I can get my, you know, the list of courses online with descriptions, all that out to kids that I can connect with. You know, if I in the past we'd send them a letter in the mail with all of this information there. It's got to go out now, right, to get them on time. Well, with the iPad, or with at least with the digital version of all these books, I have the flexibility really to choose my textbook much later. If not even the day of class, right? If I'm an English teacher, for instance, and I decide, you know what, today's class is really cool. We talked about zombies, and I want to do World War Z. It's a new book coming out. It's a great book, right? It's awesome. We actually did do a whole class on zombies, right? And so you can. I mean, if you got some traction, you get some kids. What's a zombie? Whatever, they get into it. Hey, let's all download World War Z on our iPad. And it's, you know, for us, it's not like, you know, our internet connection is ridiculous. So it'd be 5 minutes maybe at the most, and we'd all have the book.
It's also where we saw the most savings on that is, you know, for the English titles, majority of them free. The other part is, you know, faculty members right around now get very ambitious. 13 titles. We're going to read 13 titles this year.
Shakespeare novel ever written.
We're going to keep hitting them. And then we'd walk through the dorm. You see stacks of books just collecting dust because the kids purchased them right at the beginning of the year. Maybe we might get to them. That was gone. This year, a lot of the faculty members started, and this was, you know, not only in the English, but also for the modular part of Inkling. They bought the first two or three chapters. And when, you know, nobody goes through the 56 chapters of Campbell's Biology. If you do, better be at MIT. But, you know, for these guys, they were getting it when they needed it and how they needed it. And that was a huge advantage for them, and also a cost savings for Mr. Williams, who's now very happy and can now pay for Delano to go to college.
Maybe. So on-demand content, relevant real-time, I sort of hinted on that. Maybe I jumped ahead. But, again, I teach AP government, right? And if you imagine a few years ago, before the Arab sunrise, yeah, it's a rough class sometimes, but before the and talk to them about democracy, what does democracy mean today, right? And I purchased my books, and I made my curriculum for the year, and then this entire amazing world-changing event takes place, right? My textbook doesn't refer to it. My notes, I have to change my lesson plans for the year. Well, now I can integrate that pretty quickly through iTunes U or through, you know, to be honest, we just adopted iTunes U a few months ago. We really were a Google App school, so for me it would be Google Sites. And going and updating my Google site, I mean, instantaneously. So real-time and relevant, because that's what they expect. And they don't, I mean, you know, if I can't tell them as a teacher something they can't Google in 3 seconds, I'm going to lose that battle every time, right? I mean, good or bad, right or wrong, you know, they're going to Google something I say. If they can learn it from Google faster, then they will. So I've got to be relevant as a teacher now. So I think sort of the last slide before we kind of go to questions and answers, and I'll just tell you my favorite movie, Matrix. Have you seen Matrix? So I'm going to do my best. Yeah, all the Matrix, absolutely. The first Matrix, right, when he's fighting Neo, the main character, the hero, is fighting the one of the bad guys, and they end up in a train station, right? And Neo's getting his butt kicked by this guy, and he pins him down on a train track, and he's like, "Hear that sound, Mr. Anderson? That's the sound of inevitability," right? And there's, you know, Neo saves the day. But that is, I mean, this is, for me, honestly, it's not a matter of if, but when. And so we go to schools, we, you know, part of the reason we did this, part of the reason as a boarding school we jumped into digital textbooks was, like Mr. Garcia said, I can throw a rock and hit five boarding schools from my campus, right? I'm a baseball coach. I got a good arm. So we are in a major competitive market, right? And economy goes down. Hey, we know we're in Northwest Connecticut. We serve New York City. Economy goes in the tank. We go for the full. It costs $42,000 a year to go to my high school. I'll say it again: $42,000 a year to go to my high school. Right? We compete with the top 1% of kids in this country. Right? How are we going to get those kids in this market? How are we going to differentiate ourselves, right? And so that's one of the reasons also why we went to this. So what's funny is now our competitors, and they are, they're competitors. We work with them, but they also compete. We compete for the same kids. They say, "Oh, that's South Kent. They're going to that fad," right? And they say, "We don't believe in fads." Yeah, we don't either. This isn't a fad. This isn't going away. As I said, this is what they will expect. My daughters and my son, when they're in high school, they're going to expect to have this in the classroom and not an old textbook. We thought we'd leave really a lot of time for questions. I know you probably want to talk to Delano, who had the experience with it. So please throw them out there. I'll return the mic.
The easiest thing to do is if you can line up behind the microphone there. Since this is being recorded, it will be much easier if you use the microphone. And why don't Gonzo, why don't you sit down too, and that way if the two of you can share the two microphones that are there, it'll make it a little bit easier. Might as well start.
Sure.
All right. Maybe a question for all three, but Delano specifically. Can you walk through just simply that process? You talked about getting to that 92%. You use different formats and different readers. What is that experience like for the teacher? Are you telling the students, "Okay, guys, we want this book, so go use this reader to get this book, and for this other course, go get this reader to use this book"? And are you telling students that in the classroom, open this reader, open that reader, use this book? What is that experience like, as opposed to, I think that's one of the challenges we're seeing out there, is you're feeling, people feel like they have to adopt one reader and one format, and then they're limited in how digital they can go.
All right. Well, specifically in my English class this year, we've read a number of books like Olive Kittredge and The Lovely Bones, but there's also been multiple readers that we can use to get those books. For example, you have it on Kindle and you have it on iBooks. So whatever was easier for us to use, it's the same. As long as we have the reading assignment done, that's all that matters. For example, Olive Kittredge is free on iBooks, but it might cost some amount of money on Kindle, so it'd be easier for us to just go on iBooks and get it.
So you're trusting the student then to get the book and just saying, "Go get the book," or are you delivering it to them in that case?
Okay, so a couple different things. So that real time, no, it's cool. that real time experience, like in the class, like let's go get this right now. That's gonna be on the teacher. And one of the cool things about our sort of experiment is the teachers really can handle a lot of the general IT questions about the, you know, help them get that book if they need it. But we had a huge onboarding sort of, you know, we call it orientation week when they come up, and when Classbook helped us out with the emails that we'd have for each kid. We really did go through and sit with them. How do I load Amazon or Kindle or whatever? How do I load iBooks? How do I load Inkling? How do I load CoreSmart? And we did a pretty significant training experience for those boys the first day or day and a half of school. And after that, we multitask out all the time of books into notes and Evernote, for instance, right? It's pretty seamless. I don't think I experienced really any issues.
But we did, standardize the book in the classroom, like you were saying. So we don't have kids who are in the same class and fills AP government. There's not kids that are on Inkling, and then of course Smart or they choose. They're all on Inkling. You know, if they're on that one, if in another class, if that book, if they chose a Core Smart title, they're all on Core Smart. They're all on the same. So just on that piece, and that was in the beginning. But again, what Delano was referring to is that instant. We're going to go for this. Of course, the kids are going to choose the free version.
Right.
So we made it very aware to our faculty members that you got to take a look at what's out there, because if you're going to try to charge $14.99 and you're trying to push for this version, but you can get the same experience out of this free version. So a lot of that came from, again, the faculty learning the experience on the first year.
So the teacher, or at some level, the administrator is dictating, for this class, you need this title in this format.
The
for
teacher,
that class, you might need that title in that format. Is that
for that first experience? So they've pre-ordered their books in the summertime or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but if we're talking that real time kind of, hey, guys, just go get Oliver Kittredge.
Yeah, that'll go wherever.
Yeah, free for all.
Great. This is wonderful information. I appreciate you guys sharing all this.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I also really appreciate hearing this. I have a question, though, about educational content. I guess you've got this great experience with educational content delivery to the students. And I guess my question is, what has your guys' experience been with sort of the educational content creation sort of from the students back to you? Because, I mean, looking around, yeah, sure. I got a fan back there. Looking around, I see all these people near me, and they're all sort of tapping dinky notes on their iPads. I mean, there's obviously so much adoption here, but... So I'm sort of a little curious about that, what the students are doing to get their stuff back to you.
Yeah, a couple things. So, you know, we were working with Delano on this before, by the way, and we wanted to tell him, it was a cool thing. We said, Delano, you got to go from book reports to YouTube, man. You got to mention YouTube, and you got to talk about Facebook groups, right, man? But this is one of the major byproducts of having. I'm gonna say iPad again. I don't get any money. I don't get a penny every time I say it. The iPad for us, having the camera on there is huge. The content that the boys can generate. So what we did is we harnessed that energy. You know what's going to happen? They're going to make videos of each other. So let's provide a place, their own website. This is all student done. Everything you see here is student done.
Completely hands off. We do not control this. We let them. Generate, create the content.
And that video?
The video that that you saw earlier was basically all my own footage. All that footage I got myself. But I was actually part of the first class that made this website. And the way it worked is my class specifically was given the iPad a year or a term before everyone else was, so we could experiment with the videos and stuff like that. So all the creation that we've done, it's kind of, this is the outcome of that.
You guys are talking English class, so I guess I'm going to ask, in English class, do you still have, Delano, like book reports and papers and things, or was it totally different kind of assignment expected?
We have book reports and papers and all that, but then there's also been video assignments where we had to create videos or we had to reenact the book or stuff like that. But it makes it so much easier because of the accessibility of the iPad. The iPad lets you do so much without having to go so far, so...
I for my final project, I teach AP U.S. history. We have to have final exams in my school. It's like a standing, you have to put people through the torture of final exams. So I have an AP exam, which is in the middle of May, and 2 weeks later I've got to give the kids a final exam. Why does that make any sense? So for that 2 weeks this year, I did a special project where we did a TED Talk. Showed them a few TED Talks, Malcolm Gladwell and other pretty awesome economists. I fashion myself an economist. I'm pretty bush league. And having them create their own TED Talk, right? Still had a paper due, right? Still had a, you know, 10-page, that traditional 10-page paper. But now what they've got to do is take it another level and publish it. They're on YouTube. If you want, I could probably share you a few of the links. Some of them are terrible. But but the end, that's sort of the 21st century curriculum. Heidi Hayes Jacobs really talks about this is what it's going to mean for them to be literate. They've got to know how to post stuff on YouTube. So it's not just replacing the paper. No, the paper's still a part of it. The writing is still a part of it. It's sort of taking it another level further and publishing it. These kids love to publish. Imagine, you guys, I mean, we think of ourselves, as, I haven't written a book, right? Our kids in our school, they publish every day. And the final bit, talk about English. Remember when most of us probably had English in high school or college, whatever, how many revisions you'd go through in a paper, right? How many times you printed out your paper to hand in to the teacher. Now it's all done digitally through PDF. Everything's tracked. iAnnotate is one of the apps we use on to grade papers that we share back and forth. So we've seen a lot of enhancements really to what we used to do.
That's really helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, the printing part was huge. We lost, you know, just to jump in on that real, sorry, I know you have a question, but our CFO was very happy because our reduction in paper usage was enormous. I mean, almost by a fourth. I mean, we only used about a fourth of what we used to use. These kids just would email their projects as PDFs. We'd teach them, send PDF, don't send the original. That way, because the teachers before would be like, I don't have pages. Why are they sending me a pages document, you know? Send PDF. They stopped running around and jamming up printers all over the place.
Can actually talk about that, too. Really funny. The beginning of the year, I'll tell you, it was a mistake. We had a real problem with our network getting our printers online. So literally, school opens up. We have no printing for the first 2 weeks of school. And they were, my God, my teachers are going to kill me, right? But there's nothing we could do. We couldn't print. But you know what happened? Like, we expected, you know, we're rushing to get calling whoever we can to get printers.
I wasn't
online.
Rushing.
At least I thought we were rushing, which is good that he didn't tell me that till now. But you know what happened is the crutch was removed. Right, and all of a sudden they realized, geez, I can go to the old Ricoh printer, right? Take my whatever I want to show to the boys, convert it to PDF, email it to them. Whoa, how much easier is that? Again, everything's on my iPad. Even as a teacher, like I just need to bring a bunch. I have a messenger bag that I carry with me just because I don't know. I feel weird being in school without a bag, but I don't need it.
Yes, thanks very much. Fascinating. This may be a simple no answer, or it may be too early to ask you this question, but I was wondering, are there any negatives or limitations or unknowns that have struck you with this whole experience that other people can learn from that are coming online soon? What's gone differently, or what may have not gone right in this experience so far?
The digital citizenship's part. I mean, we're a boarding school, so imagine a boy coming out of a shower, right, and the funny things you can do with the camera. You've got to teach, or I'm a coach. I'm a baseball coach, and when we lose, I lose my mind. And if I'm getting recorded, right, and they're going to print this online, that's scary. But that's all it is scary, right? We can survive it. We can talk about it, but you've got to anticipate how you're going to deal with that as a school. What do you, you know, your disciplinary piece, how are you going to handle it when a boy, you know, says something, you know, maybe even racist on an email or a post or a tweet, right? How are you going to deal with that as a school? Again, if you don't have a good way, a positive way of bringing that boy back to the middle here and talking to them about the mistake they made or talking to them about their online posts, you're missing a good portion of their life. So it's a challenge, but it's something you should jump into because it's critically important that we, as schools, start addressing that. Other issues, you know, as I said, the lack of face-to-face. I mean, we're a school, a campus, really, that prides itself on that interaction. And it's not lost, but it's definitely different. And if you ask, like, if I have a conversation with my dad, and I'm looking at I'm texting the whole time, he's going to slap me, right? He's going to take his golf club out and hit me. And because his generation, that's just disrespectful, right? And our teachers, I think at first, really felt that this multitasking stuff was disrespectful. And so it's about teaching the kids when to use it, how to use it right, but also teaching the teachers about, wait, this is how they're doing it. And so we got to be patient, right, and understand that they don't mean disrespect by it. Other issues?
It wasn't an issue, but we've discovered it right before school started. We're a very international school. We pride ourselves on being global, and we've been doing that for years. It's about 22 different countries. Again, 180 boys. You can imagine how diverse it is. It's fantastic. But when the kids showed up from China or Korea, Brazil, or anywhere, and they all had their iTunes accounts or Amazon accounts or whatever from those countries, and then they realized they can't buy the books from there, we quickly snapped on that one and realized that you have to use your South Kent email address. You use our resident address as a residence for them. So that was our workaround so they can have the books. But it was a shock to us. I mean, we had a pretty hard time with some of the publishers on that. You know, it's like, wait, I can buy the book here. He can't buy it there. That piece was there. And, you know, a couple times the publishers would come back to us and say, it's not available digitally. My question was always, was it written on a typewriter? But, you know, so that's kind of what was out there. And that was the one battle, but we quickly found a way around that.
And I guess final sort of bit on that, too, would be, you know, our English teachers have observations that papers written solely on the iPad are not as of quality as papers written other ways.
And it's, on the what?
Papers that the boys have written on the iPad, right? And specifically, actually, without the keyboard device, right? Transitional
device. Steve Jobs wanted a keyboard. He would have put a keyboard.
That they think that they're not they're lesser quality. That's in their opinion. So it's like the iPad might, in their minds, be sort of linked to texting or that style of writing more. So the quality of writing on an iPad they believe had dropped. And so they did things to fix that, but that's one thing to anticipate, is that the boys do think of it more as a kind of a texting device.
Okay, we're going to have time for only two more questions.
We'll answer a lot shorter, and we'll be around.
We'll see how quickly we can get through. If not, we can continue this conversation later. Dan, did you have a question?
Yeah, actually, this will be brief because the previous questions have helped address some of the questions I think we had. I'm interested to learn, to hear a little bit more about the learning experience. Delano probably can tell us from discipline to discipline, because in English, language arts versus government versus chemistry and calculus, you do a lot more reading in one area than you do in the other. So I'm interested to hear a little bit more about how you balance your work on paper versus on the iPad.
For English class, of course, my English teacher is actually a priest. He's been working at South Kent for 16 years, and he had some trouble jumping into the iPad right away. But at first, like, he's asked us to print out our paper sometimes. There's that. And then if you go to another class like calculus, everything is done online for math at my school anyways. So we have Math Excel, and that can just be done straight off our iPads. Most of my notes are also taken on my iPad as well. I use Evernote, I use Bamboo Notebook, and I use Notability. I record notes, I write notes with a stylus. I never really take a notebook to class anymore. Ecology class this year, we did a lot of things outside. So a lot of things would be documenting, taking video, taking photos. And then there's the app Project NOAA. Let you classify different organisms and all that. So that was pretty easy. And then language, of course, there was just Spanish, and Spanish is just a textbook reciting. But one specific thing about my Spanish textbook this year was Inkling. They had recordings of how to say the words exactly, because you've come into a Spanish class or any language class and not really knowing how to pronunciate the word. And stuff like that on the on Inkling and other notebooks and other books have made it so much easier.
Want to show us?
Thank you.
What can you say in Spanish?
Hi.
Okay. Say thank you to all of them.
Gracias.
That's about all I know in Spanish.
Okay, we're going to try
and
squeeze in one more.
So I'm Ellen, and a quick question. You actually started to answer a little bit by talking about Project NOAA and some of the other kind of constellated work, the things that you're working with besides just textbooks that have been converted, and also the idea. So what I wanted to ask, since I'm an app producer, whether there are things that you would like to see for the future. I mean, I realize that in your first iteration, you didn't want to take people away from the existing way that they worked with the existing texts that they use, and whether there's a space for publishers to create new things. And I realize there's bad history for educational software and all that stuff, too, that we have to look at. But you know, whether there's an evolution and what kinds of things you would like to see come out of publishers to help you evolve your school, if that makes sense.
Well, one thing I would really like to stop doing is writing an essay and speaking an essay. If you can make that happen, that'd be great. Take a lot of time out of my day, actually. Another thing is saying notes. I don't know. Another.
You mentioned photo and video notes.
Yes, photo and video notes as well, because I could record something as notes, or record something that the teacher's doing, or I can take a photo of what she has up on the board. If I'm missing class, quick snapshot and good to go, and just saving my notes, that'd be great.
You get 50% of this, right? Any of the ideas he gives you?
Well, Matt, if you can tell Inkling later this afternoon when Matt, you know.
Great. But that's really it. There's notes and stuff like that, but can't really think of anything else. Sorry.
Right. Okay, because you're making it all yourselves. Basically.
Right. We have time for one more question. I'm sorry. That's all we're going to have time for.
Can I jump in before we ask a question? Again, we haven't had a chance to get a whole bunch of people lined up, and maybe you've got questions. I hope you have a ton of questions. I hope you reach out and want to look at South Kent School. Phil Darren, email me. I'll gladly get back to you. But if you just write down this blog site, you can enter your questions there. We can answer them later. We can create our own dialogue there. So if you haven't had a chance to ask questions, please take advantage of this.
You're doing wonderful things, but I have one question. Is there any book, and I'd like to ask this of all three of you, you would like to have in hard copy? No. And if so, what?
Hard copy? I don't really like books.
Okay. That's one out of three.
Well, you're at the right conference.
I mean, I think, yeah, is there some nostalgia lost, like, in that, in
it's
feeling?
It's not a nostalgia question. You could say family Bible. You could say something of James Joyce. So you could say anything you like.
I do have an old book my dad gave me, and that transfer, that wrapped gift under the Christmas tree or whatever on your birthday. I think there is, to me, there was still something to that. I have a summer of 1949, a book by David Halberstam about the Red Sox and the Yankees. I hate the Yankees. Sorry, I actually hate them.
We are all out of time.
that book would be. I wouldn't want that to convert that. But that's because of the memory
that's
behind the book, not necessarily.
You were doing so well. Really? Okay, for those of you who didn't get your questions answered, if you just want to line up over here, we'll try and get most of them done in the 5 minutes and then take it outside afterwards.
We're not security. People keep asking us around, like, for directions. We're not security. This is a school patch. Sorry.
I want to thank Phil and Delano and Gonzo for the time today.